This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howland. In case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at www.wbuafm.ua.edu, or you can also download the Crimson White app and just click on the 90.7 streaming link. And this is our first show for the spring semester, you know, with COVID, and I'm just not going to go into it with COVID. And let's see, our guest last week, we're supposed to start last week, and our guest last week's wife went into labor literally minutes before the show was supposed to be, you know, supposed to start. So you can't help those kind of things. So this is our first show for the spring semester. We're going to have, you know, we have shows all the way until the end of April, 1st of May, right up against graduation. So if you're listening now and you have any ideas for upcoming shows, please email those to me at brainmattersradio@wbuafm.ua.edu. And of course, I'll consider using your show topic. We've got a lot of our shows already planned out, but we're always needing, you know, new ideas for our shows. So tonight's show is very interesting. I mean, Catherine, I think you were doing research and found Dr. Courtney, and I'll give her a proper introduction in a minute, but our show tonight is about self-deception. And deception isn't always an outward-facing act. There's also the lies people tell themselves for reasons ranging from maintenance of self-esteem to serious delusions beyond their control. And while lying to oneself is generally perceived as harmful, some experts argue that certain kinds of self-deception, like believing one can accomplish a difficult goal, even if evidence exists to the contrary, can have a positive effect on all overall well-being. So tonight we're going to delve into this topic and talk some more about lying to yourself with Dr. Courtney Warren. And Dr. Courtney, can I call you Dr. Courtney?
Please do.
That's what she refers to herself on her website. And I'll give that website out in just a minute. But Dr. Courtney is a board certified clinical psychologist, received her PhD in psychology from Texas A&M University in 2006 after completing her internship at McLean Hospital, Harvard Medical School. She's also the author of a book, Lies We Tell Ourselves, The Psychology of Self-Deception, and her new book about love addiction and breakups is scheduled to be published this year. I'm excited when I read that, Dr. Courtney, because that's my favorite thing to talk about in a counseling session. Yes, breakups and relationships. I love it.
Well, we'll talk about that next time for sure, too.
I'll have you on again when the book comes out. How about that?
Great. Sounds great.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. You're in California right now, so you're a couple of hours behind us. So
that's true.
I always feel a little guilty when I invite people on the East Coast to be on the show because they, you know, it's later there, and yeah. I hate for them to have to wait around and be on the show, but that's just how it goes. Tell the listeners about yourself. I gave a little bit about your credentials, but why you're interested in this topic.
Oh, well, let me start kind of with the beginning. I entered graduate school really fascinated by human nature, really fascinated by psychology and how we can become better versions of ourselves, how to promote mental health. And I started studying some of the main schools of thought that we use to practice psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So those would be all of the things that you probably talk to your listeners about. Cognitive behavioral theory and psychodynamic theory with Freud and existential theory and all of these theories about what makes us uniquely human. And each of these theories actually uniquely talks about how we lie to ourselves in different ways. And once I started seeing how people lied to themselves all around me, including yes. myself, I couldn't unsee it. It's like this big light bulb moment of like, oh my gosh, we do this all the time. And as I progressed in my career, one thing that became very apparent to me as I treated patients was that if they were stuck, oftentimes it was because they absolutely could not see reality. And until I could get them to see the truth, they were going to stay exactly the same.
Yes.
And so I was asked to give a TED talk on any topic related to psychology. It was at UNLV where I was a professor at the time. And they said, Dr. Warren, Courtney, what can you talk about? Anything you want. And I was like, well, if it's supposed to relate to every human, what I want people to know is that self-deception is your biggest obstacle to creating your ideal life. Mm-hmm. And the degree to which you can start to be honest with yourself is the degree to which you will have the freedom to become who you really want to be. And if I can get that message across to any college student out there who's inspired to become more than who they are, that is the biggest piece of advice I could give them.
It is. And actually, the TED Talk that Dr. Courtney's referring to, I watched that and while I was doing some research for the show, I watched it last week. It's only about 16 minutes. But it's man, shorter. You put a lot of information in that 16 minutes. And I mean, I was taking notes like crazy. And it was so fascinating because I don't know. It's like what you just said. After I saw that TED Talk and then I started meeting with students, I started thinking, how can I utilize this with these students I see? Because I think almost everyone that I have seen since I watched your TED Talk, they're lying to themselves on different scales. Sometimes yeah. it's a very, very small scale. Sometimes it's big and obvious.
Yes.
You know, so how do you recognize, you know, you said you see it all around you, but how do you recognize, like, give some examples. Can you give some examples, not to put you on the spot, but with somebody who is college aged, you know, yes. their issues a lot of times are self-esteem, breakups. We'll talk about relationships, you know, adjustment, I guess, stress and anxiety, definitely some depression. So how do you recognize it?
Well, let me give you an example, and then we can delve in to some of the specific ways we lie to ourselves, because there are some really important ways that all humans lie to yourselves. And once you know what they are, it's much easier to spot them in yourself and in everybody around you.
Now I'm scared. Now I'm like, worried about what you're going to say, because I'm like, okay, go ahead, sir.
Let's take the topic of breakups, because you're interested in that. It affects all college students. I got to tell you, you know, one of the seminal studies that was ever done on love in college age students showed that in college, about 98% of students will say they've had their heart broken, and about 95% of students will tell you they broke somebody else's heart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So this is
the right jumper and the dumpy. Yes.
Yeah. It's going to happen to all of us, probably both sides of it, maybe many times in our lives. I hate to tell you that, but it's going to. Let's say you are going through a really bad breakup. You're sad. You're crushed. You are not sure where yesterday ended and tomorrow starts. You feel like you are in an absolute hole of blackness.
Yep.
You come into our office for therapy. You're trying to figure out how to move forward, but you feel stuck. Some of the most common lies that you are going to tell yourself are things like, I can't live without them.
Yep.
I'm not able to move on. Nobody else is ever going to want me. They were the perfect person for me. I'm never going to find anybody like them. They were the one soulmate of my life, and now they're gone forever.
Ooh.
At the time, I know you believe those things to be true. And the problem is that most of us think that our thoughts accurately reflect reality because we want to believe that our thinking is accurate.
Yes. And you're seeing it clearly.
And you're seeing it clearly. Like, this has to be true because I feel like it's true, which is a lie called emotional reasoning. It has to be true. It has to be. And the reality is that much of what you think is true is objectively false. And the first step in helping you become more honest with yourself is getting you to become aware of what you're thinking.
Yes.
And critically analyze it to determine whether you have any evidence that it's actually accurate.
Yes. And the trick, don't you think the trick in therapy is like selling this to the person? Because they're going to fight you with it, you know, not physically. They're going to fight you with it and say, no, no, I can see it so clearly, you know. So selling it to them is tough.
It can be so hard, especially from the therapist's perspective, because, and actually with your friends, I am quite sure that all your college students out there are going, oh, all my friends do this.
Yes.
They give me 1,000 excuses why they didn't do their homework, why they're staying up late, why they're stressed, why they can't exercise, why they're not eating well. Right. And you see it once the light bulb goes off, you're going to see it. And I guarantee you it's going to be a lot easier to see it in other people than it's going to be to see it in yourself. But that's still a start. That's absolutely a start.
Do you think we do this as a protective factor?
Oh, definitely. You know, we believe what we wish were true.
Yes. I read that in an article when I was doing research that that's the biggest thing is we do that because we wish it was true.
We do. We do. And it can be incredibly protective because the thing about self-deception is it's protecting your ego, your core sense of yourself.
Yes.
Information that really hurts, that's really hard to acknowledge, that you don't really want to admit. Because here's the catch about self-deception. Once you realize that you're not being honest with yourself, you can't go back. There's no
gotta do something about it at that point, right?
Either you have to change or the information is going to hurt you more when you don't because you know better. You know better now. Yeah. So when you say to me, well, I'm either going to eat one cookie or the whole box of cookies. And I say, well, why do you think that's a good choice? And they say, well, it's probably not a good choice, but I don't know how to eat moderately. And I say, well, let's work on the moderation practice. And they are now aware, oh, I tend to lie to myself when I eat. I tend to do that. So the next time they get out that box of cookies, it's not going to be the same experience if they have one or the whole box, because in their mind, they're thinking now, I know that I do this. I'm trying to stop doing this and I'm doing it anyway. And I'm now more responsible for the consequences of my choice.
That's right. And that's the key. That's the key, responsibility. Okay, let's take a break. We're going to take a very quick break because I've got so many questions and I haven't really even gotten to any of the questions. We started with what interested you. But when we come back, let's take an email question and see what people are thinking out there.
Sure.
So hang on just a minute. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7. We'll be right back.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're listening listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about self-deception. And my guest is Dr. Courtney Warren. She is a psychologist, a licensed psychologist, but also the author of a really cool-sounding book. And I think from what I see, it looks like a pretty easy read.
Very.
You know, for people. It's called Lies We Tell Ourselves, The Psychology of Self-Deception. We left off talking about just that, especially with regards to, and the example Dr. Courtney gave was with breakups. But there's so many other ways that people lie that I'm going to include myself because I know I've done it. Nobody is in the clear with self-deception from what I read from all the research I did doing the show. Let's take a quick question and see where this goes. And you may have already answered it, but the first question, this is interesting and very pertinent, ironically, because I had somebody, I think it was yesterday, that told me she thinks she has imposter syndrome, which it may actually be self-deception, because the question is, what is the difference in self-deception and imposter syndrome, particularly as it relates to college students?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between self-deception and imposter syndrome? Well, I'd probably need an example of what kind of imposter we feel like we are. As the college student, I might gather that you're thinking you're not good enough to be there.
You're not good enough to be there. The person I talked to yesterday, a professor, I guess it maybe was a psychology class, I don't know. A professor started talking about the definition of imposter syndrome, and it made her start thinking, I don't deserve to be here. I'm not as good as these other people. I'm like a fake. Mm-hmm.
My guess is if I went through the process of analyzing your thoughts, you would realize that the thought that you are an imposter is wrong. Now, why do I say that? Let's just take the example that you just gave, BJ. Let's say that you are out there thinking, I don't deserve to be here.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at the evidence. What evidence do you have that you don't deserve to be here? Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably don't have any evidence because you're already here. What evidence do you have that you do, in fact, deserve to be here? Well, you got in, you're sitting in class, you're working hard, you haven't failed out yet.
That's right.
You finished high school, so you probably are likely to finish college. Let's just make a whole list. And once you look at the list of the evidence, the deception is continuing to believe that you're an imposter when you have evidence to the contrary.
Yes.
And data says you're not an imposter. You're probably struggling in some areas. Welcome to life. You might not be perfect at everything. None of us are.
I think it's easier to think that you don't deserve to be there, especially, and I don't know, I've only seen her a couple of times, so I don't know the person's history with regards to low self-esteem or what's happened in her past that this is coming from, because it struck me as, you know, just what you described, as this is a protective factor. She is lying to herself because it's easier to think that she's failing at something than that there is an answer to this. It's puzzling to me. It's very puzzling to me, you know. I think it was you had written an article that I read for the research, but I think it was the TED Talk. Help me remember. You used a term, and I love it, honest liars.
Honest liars.
How can you be, what do they call that? What is that called? Double entendre?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe the neurons are firing today. What does honest liars mean? Is it just another definition of lying to yourself?
You know, what I mean by the term, because I kind of made it up for the talk.
I love it.
What I mean is that I think most of us, including probably the large majority of your college students, strive to be honest. We want to believe that we're honest, and we tend to trust that other people are honest with us. And that is a trait of human nature, actually. Yeah. We have to believe in other people, and we have to kind of have some version of them as being benevolent because they take care of us when we're infants and then we need them over time. And then we live with them and need a social connection. So if we think they're really bad, we're kind of in trouble because it's a reflection of us as well. So we have this value in general of being honest. The problem is we're all liars, because being honest with yourself requires so much conscious effort.
Yes.
Because it's not just the big blatant lies. The big blatant lies we're usually pretty aware of when we're doing them. It's the hundreds of tiny little thoughts,
yes,
feelings, reactions that are actually very inaccurate that will really affect your life the most. Mm-hmm. And so trying to become more honest about the lies you tell yourself is really what I mean by honest liars. Strive to be honest about when you lie and why, because that's going to be the biggest game changer of your life.
I imagine in your therapy sessions, you're doing at first, while you're building rapport, I'm assuming you're also doing a lot of education.
Yes, absolutely.
With your patients, as well as, I mean, let's face it, this is basically confrontation.
You know, I tend to be kind of tough around the edges, a supportive tough around the edges, yes, but absolutely. Because my job and your job as mental health professionals is to do everything that I can do that I believe is in your best interest.
Yep,
as my
don't client. Candy coat it. That's what I tell my students. I'm not going to candy coat this. And they usually appreciate it.
If I don't believe it's in your best interest for you to keep lying to yourself, then I'm going to have to try to tell you the truth or get you to see it.
Yeah.
And so that feels bad.
It does.
It feels bad.
And I also mean,
really, I burst in the bubble of what therapy is really like. If you think you're going to come in and your therapist is going to tell you what to do, make you feel better, I got to tell you, you're going to have some roughness before you get to the, you know, sunshine outside.
You can read Glamour magazine for that, is what I always tell them.
But it's worth every bit of effort. It is worth every bit of effort, because with self-awareness comes freedom. The more you understand who you are and why you are the way you are, the more freedom you have to make choices that reflect everything you want in your life.
Yeah.
The biggest risk, I think, to humans is becoming what Kierkegaard would have called sleepwalking through life, mm-hmm, becoming automatons, just going through the motions without any sort of conscious self-evaluation is really a waste.
Yeah.
It's a waste.
How long does it take to work on self-deception? Is this like years long process in therapy, or is there like a finite, number of sessions even that you have seen people for? Or is this a pretty quick fix? And I hate to say it like that. I don't want to minimize it.
Well, what I would say is it's a lifelong process that you can start today.
Yeah.
And actually, I think if you're motivated and interested in changing, you can utilize this information very quickly, and it will actually make a big difference very fast.
Okay, I'm asking a personal question, it's a professional question, but I have a motive.
Yeah.
Can you use self-deception as a topic of group therapy?
Definitely. Yes. And it will be very interesting to see people's response.
Light bulb.
Because they'll be able to tell each other all the ways they're not being honest. And if they can do it in a safe space where you, as the therapist, can utilize it as a sense of support. We all do this, including you. I certainly lie to myself. And the more aware of it you are, the easier it is for you to change.
Well, yes. And in a group also, it's easy for you to call somebody else out too, which I think is pretty powerful with a peer group.
Very powerful. Very powerful. I would be very interested in doing that in a group setting.
If I were to do this, Catherine, as a, for a support group here, could I use your term honest liars?
Of course.
I'm putting you on the spot, but I just love that term. It's so catchy, but it's just fascinating. You know, another term, I guess, that you mentioned on the presentation is psychological strength. Yes. You talk about, you know, how does someone, I mean, our head coach here, our football coach, Nick Saban, he uses mental toughness.
Absolutely.
I don't know if this is the same thing, but it sounds like the same thing. What is psychological strength?
You know what? There's a lot of overlap to the two terms. And again, that's one that I made up. So I'll tell you what I define as psychological strength. Psychological strength is a mix of integrity and self-esteem. It is your ability to be honest with yourself, mixed with enough grounded sense of your own value as a human being, that no matter what comes your way in your external world, you know you can handle it because you're gonna be okay.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. Yeah.
It's this idea that you can tolerate the truth because you're strong enough to handle it. So that even if someone tells you something really rough about yourself, you can hear that and go, wow, I really better think about that. Because if I'm like that, I don't like that about myself and I got to work on it. Yeah. And it doesn't cut you to the core.
Yeah. Or you don't take it so personally that you are defensive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's hard.
Psychological strength, the degree to which you can handle the truth gracefully.
You know what comes into my mind? You can't handle the truth. Jack Nicholson, you know, in A Few Good Men. I can't help it. This is fascinating. Let's take another quick break, just a few minutes. And then when we come back, let's take another email question, because we have several and I'm just going to have to pick and choose, because I don't know if we're going to get to all of them. And we may have already answered a few of them. So if you'll sit tight, Dr. Courtney, we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther. We're talking tonight, this is our first show back for the spring semester, and it's a great show already, about self-deception, lies we tell ourselves. And my guest is Dr. Courtney Warren. She's a clinical psychologist, but she has a great TED Talk, if you just want to Google it. I can't remember the title of it. Is it self-deception, the actual title?
The Psychology of Self-Deception.
The Psychology. So if you want to, it's only about 15 or 16 minutes, but it's a lot of good information that I think, you know, it would be good for everyone to hear, to be honest. And a great book that's just, well, your book was actually published back in, was it 2019 or 2020?
You know, it was longer ago than that. What happened was I didn't actually expect to ever write a book on self-deception, but after giving the TED Talk, I had so much to say that I would tell you this book is my 3-hour lecture on self-deception as opposed to my 15-minute talk.
Well, and you've answered my questions tonight that I've posed to you, but also on the TED Talk presentation, you put it in terms that a non-psychology person, I'll say it like that, can understand. Anybody can understand. And it's like you have this, when you were saying certain things on the talk, you know, I was thinking, aha, in my mind. I think a lot of people would have an aha moment and have some realization about their own lives just from hearing the talk. So, all right, let's take another email question. Let me look and see if you've already answered this. But the question is, assuming a rationalization is another word for self-deception, do you see any self-deception as healthy? And I mentioned that in the intro, you know, in the little intro, that some professionals do talk about that. And if so, what might be signs that something is healthy versus not healthy? And there's another question also added onto that, but let me let you answer that first. It's a lot to throw at you.
So let's start with the term rationalization. Rationalization is a kind of self-deception that is giving a reason to explain why you did something that really isn't acceptable to you. So this is a version of, well, you know, I wouldn't have yelled at you if you hadn't yelled at me first. I wouldn't have cheated if you hadn't cheated first. I wouldn't have done X, except let me give you this long explanation for why it's okay. When really it's not okay. Because you wouldn't have to give me an explanation at all if it was okay with you.
It's just an excuse.
Yes. Yes. You can think of rationalizations as excuses. So the second part of the question is self-deception ever healthy for you? Whether it's rationalization or denial or projection, there are so many ways we lie to ourselves. And what I would say to you and everyone else is this. I believe that the goal of this life is for you to be as honest with yourself as possible. I do not believe that self-deception is the ideal for any of us. That said, self-deception does serve a very important function. It keeps you from information that's too painful for you to admit. So there are times in life where you're in so much pain or you're struggling so much with a trauma or with an experience or some sort of abuse that you can't admit the reality to yourself.
Yes. Yet.
What I would say is it's critical that you understand that it's serving a function for you, and the ultimate goal is for you to not need the deception anymore, so that you can look at whatever it is that's smacking you in the face that hurts so much. And it's not going to go away. I can't make a pain go away. I can't make the past trauma go away. It already happened. But what I can do through exposure and through building your identity back up is make it such that that experience doesn't have any power anymore. So you can see it without falling apart, without needing to defend yourself, without needing the self-deception to protect you, because you'll be able to see it for what it is. And here's where the psychological strengths comes in.
Right.
Know that you're gonna be okay.
It builds you up.
Yes. The more grounded in yourself you feel, the more you're gonna be able to tolerate truth.
This person who emailed these two questions, those were great questions, actually. The last question she has, how does one distinguish, and maybe you've answered this, but how do you know the difference between healthy and unhealthy rationalization?
That's the thing. I wouldn't say that it's healthy. I would say that it serves a function. I think the ultimate goal to your health is for you to be able to tolerate a tsunami of truth, of tough realities about everything, about the Me Too movement and global warming and abuses that are happening and political distress, and be able to take it without having it knock you over. So that you can see exactly what's going on and know, I can respond to this from a place of honesty and integrity because I'm okay.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you don't have thoughts and feelings about what's going on or what happened to you. It means that you don't have to lie to yourself about it anymore to be comfortable in your own skin. So I'm reluctant to say healthy. I'd say it's healthier if you can be fully honest with yourself.
So that kind of ties into what we've talked about already, the reasons we do lie to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's deep. You mentioned givens of life.
Yes.
What are those? You mentioned that in your presentation too. The givens of life, what do they have to do? What are they, and what do they have to do with self-deception?
So psychology really comes from philosophy. It's like a mix of science and philosophy. And the great philosophical existential tradition created some really amazing psychologists like Viktor Frankl and Erv Yalom. And the givens of life are the fundamental realities that existentialists believe are true of humans, true of human nature. And there are four of them. The first is death. You're going to die and everyone you love is going to die and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep.
The second is meaninglessness. You don't have inherent value as one single individual person on this planet. In the great course of human history, your life just actually doesn't have much meaning. Third.
Oh gosh. That's hard to follow.
I know. These are big. These are biggies.
Big
ones. So death, meaninglessness, ultimate aloneness.
These are not getting better.
No, these are big.
These are big. Getting worse. Okay.
The aloneness is you're born into a single body. You are one individual. And as much as you want to belong to a community, and you need that actually as a human, you're going to die alone because your existence on this planet is actually an individual one.
Yes. Yes.
And freedom, existential freedom. That is, you are who you choose to be. You have the freedom to react to everything you encounter in life. And it's your responsibility to take action in whatever way that is. Don't blame anybody else for who you are, not in an existential world. So these are four givens. They're huge. They are things that are just true of humans. They're true for every single one of us. You cannot escape it. It is just a reality of humanity. The way that that fuels self-deception is that these are crazy heavy ideas, so hard for us to wrap our minds around, that you're going to want to lie to yourself about them. You're going to want to deny or not think about or distract yourself from death. You're going to want to try to grab onto somebody else's meaning to make sure that you do have meaning in your life instead of really figuring out what matters to you. The goal of the givens of life is actually not to weigh you down. The goal of seeing the givens of life is for you to create a life that gave meaning to you so that you don't have any regret when it's over. And so the more you can embrace the givens of life as just fundamental realities that you have to confront and confront them, the better off you're going to be.
Makes sense.
Write a will, think about death, talk to your parents about death, figure out what matters to you and change anything you're doing in your life that isn't reflective of your values. Take responsibility for who you are.
I feel so motivated right now. let me, this is just amazing. Let me take another email question because this, I never really thought about this question in some of the questions I was composing for you. I mean, to piggyback on the givens of life, that's hard to do, you know, because I'm having to digest this right now. This is so fascinating. The next person, the email is about predisposing factors. Mm. Are there certain individuals or are there certain certain factors that predispose us to self-deception?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Like what? Is there a gender difference?
That is a very interesting question and very hard to tease apart in the literature.
I bet.
And in fact, as you might imagine, doing research on self-deception is incredibly difficult because yeah. I can't ask you how you lie to yourself. So,
and people will lie about that even.
Yeah, it's a different ballgame of trying to assess. But what I will say is this, because self-deception is protective, the biggest vulnerability factor you're going to have is early childhood adverse experiences. Because wherever you are most vulnerable is where you're going to lie. So if you had a situation, let's go all the way back. Let's say you are the product of a divorce. Your parents got divorced, and let's just say your father wasn't a big part of your life, which is a very common experience in the world, in this country, certainly. You probably learned to believe some fundamental things about men, about relationships, about yourself, that will drive self-deceptive thinking as an adult. Because it will be too painful for you to go back into your history and figure out what you learned that made you have these reactions now.
Yes.
So for example, you may think men suck or women suck or they're not trustworthy or something's wrong with you. You're broken. You're not lovable. And it's not that you're consciously aware of these things. That's the problem with self-deception. You probably wouldn't come to me and say, I'm broken.
Yeah.
You might, but probably less.
Most
like
people aren't that self-aware.
Right. If we take an experience, just let's say with dating, and you start to care about something and you realize, or someone, you realize you're so uncomfortable, you don't know how to be close to somebody. Mm-hmm. And we go back into your past and we say, well, what did you learn about love? And if you have any of that self-dialogue in there, I'm not good enough, I'm broken, I'm not lovable, or relationships are dangerous, people will always leave me. Of course, as an adult, you're going to have self-deceptive thoughts that reflect those core beliefs, yes, we would call them, those, yeah, schema, those early learnings that are based in some version of a high stress experience, which changes some of your neurobiology, brain, which is chemistry, a whole other conversation, mm-hmm, we can get into.
That's a whole other show, Catherine.
Yes,
take notes on that. Yeah.
But an important one. And it also serves as the foundation for your learning things that are false. And when you start learning things that are objectively false at a young age, I guarantee you, you take them with you.
Yes, it starts a habit, a trend, a pattern.
And you start seeing everything in your life through the lens that you learned early on. And in that way, you will misinterpret reality characteristically in all of the areas that you feel most insecure.
Wow. Do you give workshops?
I do.
I'm just curious because I think this would be great workshops to teach people, you know, because it's so, I mean, you could just reach more people.
I would be happy to do a workshop with you for sure.
Oh my gosh. What about definitely, I mean, I'm taking notes right now. What about a podcast? Do you have a podcast yourself?
I don't. I'm on a lot of podcasts actually. And I do a lot of kind of trainings and workshops and kind of keynote lectures for, yeah, companies, for universities, for a large wide range of audiences actually, because the truth is this affects every single one of us.
It does. It's very common. You know, you can't get out of it. Nobody can say, oh, I don't do that. She's wrong. Have you ever presented at the American Counseling Association or any counseling associations? I'm curious.
Yes. You know, I'm a clinician, so I don't usually go to the counseling association, but I present at American Psychological Association, the ABCT, if you ever go there, for behavior, yes, therapists.
Yes.
Any of those professional organizations. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the organization, you know, the associations, the national and the state. You would be a great keynote speaker for our state organization. So that I got to keep you in mind. This is fascinating. Tell me some more about resources. Well, first of all, I want to ask you real quickly, and Catherine, we may not go to another break because I want to ask this. You left academia. You actually, I guess you taught psychology at UNLV. You mentioned it just a little bit ago, but you also mentioned it, I think, at the end of your presentation. What happened? Why'd you choose to leave academia?
Oh, you know, I am the only child of two professors. And I had this image in my head that really, as a psychologist, I had to go get tenure and become a professor. And I did that.
Ugh.
And then I had my first child. And I was confronted with myself in a very different way.
Yep.
Do I want to continue running this large research lab, doing research, my primary expertise in research is addictions and eating pathology. So do I want to keep writing grants and writing really high quality research articles for, you know, 10 other MD PhDs who are going to read them? Mm. Or do I want to do something that actually brings psychology to the public?
Yeah.
Because really, psychology is meant to be used for your benefit.
Yeah.
And so I really had this massive kind of come to Jesus moment with myself of, you know, I'm really glad I went into academia. I love university settings. I love working with students. It's such an engaging time in life and culture to be in a university setting. But I felt like I really was not disseminating this core material to so many people who really would benefit the most. So I decided to spend more time with my children as they were little and pursue a more public career, doing things like giving lectures.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic.
To general audiences. I still do a lot in the professional psych community, but obviously it has a somewhat different bent.
Gives you more flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Was I wrong in saying you're in California? Are you still in Nevada?
I am in California, but I am still in the Department of Psychiatry now at UNLV as an adjunct faculty. So I still teach for them psychotherapy to a lot of the medical residents who are trying to figure out how to be therapists.
Ugh, good luck with that. Do you have any suggestions for people listening?
Yes.
About resources, even apps?
Resources. Well, certainly feel free to download or get a copy of my book if you're interested in understanding self-deception more, or even going to my website. There's a lot of free materials.
And your website is?
It's drcourtney.com.
And it's spelled CORTNEY.com. Yes.
Yep. Dr. CORTNEY. That's right. I would also say just practically, usually people go to therapy because something isn't going well in their life, right? There's something that isn't feeling right. Maybe you're struggling with some symptoms. Maybe you had some experience that was really hard. I strongly encourage anyone who's interested in understanding themselves better to find a good therapist first and foremost. So they should come see BJ and figure out how to get I also would say that independent of what your issue is, there is a way for you to work on your self-deception in that arena. And so bringing that up as a topic with your therapist is something that you want to work through. Mm-hmm. Will very much help you, because where you're going to lie is going to be very broad. But when you're having any behavior that doesn't match your emotion, pause, because there's self-deception in there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When what you say doesn't match how you feel, pause. Something is in there. Mm-hmm. Anytime what you think, feel, and act is out of whack, there's some deception going on. And it's something that you actually can change. You actually can work through it and really come out a more evolved version of yourself in ways that are going to feel really good.
I know you said your specialty seems like it's addictions or eating disorders. I'm assuming you can use self-deception with both of those issues.
Oh, yes.
I mean, not just pertaining to stress or breakups or just trying to find yourself. I mean, these are big, heavy hitting issues, substance abuse and eating disorders.
I mean, truly, you know, I think one of the biggest struggle for anyone out there who's struggling with a substance addiction or addiction, any kind of addiction, whether it's gambling or gaming or internet use or porn or you name it, until you can admit that you have a problem, we're really stuck.
Step one. So
the step one is getting out of denial and then doing a really thorough assessment of who you are and how you got here and who you need to make amends to and how you're going to do it differently. Those are all related to knowing yourself.
That's right. That's right. Thank you so much for being on the show. The hour always goes by so fast when it's such an interesting topic. You're really good at what you do.
Thank you, BJ. I really appreciate it. And I love talking to you.
And I think I sent an email out to all of our colleagues here in the counseling center that you were going to be on the show. And somebody bounced back a question. When are you going to order her book for our library here? Because we have a library here at the counseling center. So I think I'll do that. I think it would be a wonderful addition. And if I start a support group, I'll probably be in touch with you because I'll need a little bit of guidance probably on how to do that with this particular topic. This is fascinating.
I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much. Let me make a few announcements and then we'll close the show. Don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted to Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, and voices.ua.edu. And Dr. Courtney, you asked me about the Apple Podcasts. Usually the show is edited and then put up on Apple Podcasts. It's usually a few weeks later, but I'll let you know when it's posted to Apple Podcasts. All you have to do is type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. There's also a link to voices.ua.edu on our counseling center website, which is counseling.ua.edu. And I always like to thank the people who've made our show possible. As always, Dr. Greg Vanderwall, he's our executive director here at the counseling center. Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media, my production assistant, and my colleague is Catherine Howell. All of my colleagues who are so supportive at the counseling center, the WVUA staff, especially Noah, who helps us edit the show, and my guest tonight, Dr. Courtney Warren. Thank you so much. Next week, our show topic is going to be college students and relationships with step families. So if you're interested in that, join us next week. I appreciate you listening tonight. Have a good evening. Thanks again for listening to Brain Matters, and good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.